I believe life is one big spiritual creative experience, and everything that we do, whether it's start a business, write a book, fall in love, or I don't know, pull a bunch of tarot cards, has a little spiritual lesson wrapped up inside of it. I'm obsessed with trying to understand the mysteries of the world from the arcane to the mundane and unboxing as many spiritual lessons as I can. And on the 12th house, we're going to explore all of that. So let's get into it together. Okay. So one thing that you should know about me is if you tell me you want a podcast episode on something, I say, bet, game, set, match, I'm there. And recently I was talking to one of my genius clients, Jamie Nee, and we were talking about a book, and I said, this book changed my life. And she said, you should make a podcast about that. That's an amazing podcast that I would listen to. And I said, okay, Jamie, because you're a genius and I'll do anything you tell me. So here we are. Welcome to a new, maybe this will be an ongoing series. You know, there are some books that, or movies, or, you know, pieces of media that you consume, and you're like, whoa, that was something. Like, that just changed my cellular makeup. And there are also books or lessons or, I don't know, classes, some one-off phrase that a yoga teacher says when you're in Shavasana and highly suggestible, that literally it's like the fabric of the cosmos rips open. And like a new portal opens for you, a new potential future. And it's like you could have kept going in that one direction that you were oriented in before you read that book, heard that thing, learned that lesson, whatever, were in the right place at the right time. You could have kept going and your life would have been fine, but you didn't. You got this new piece of information and you went through that new freshly ripped portal and all of these new potential futures opened up to you and you took that path. And there are only like a handful of books I feel that ripped open the cosmos for me, that like tore open a new future for me. And I would like to talk about them. And we often talk at Holisticism, at least internally, about like books that are canon, you know, books that are like our Bible, that are spiritual texts, even though they aren't necessarily like viewed as spiritual texts. And I am delighted to say that the first spiritual text, non-spiritual spiritual text that we are looking at on the 12th House podcast is the book, The War of Art. And I am so lucky to debrief on this book with my friend and honestly, someone that I like admire so much as a creative genius, Courtney Romano. And let me just plant you in The War of Art. It's a book by Stephen Pressfield, Stevie P. And it's a tiny little skinny ass book. You can listen to this audiobook in like 90 minutes. You can read this book probably in a night. It's really easy to get through. I don't know how this book ended up on my bookshelf, but I think I probably like stumbled across it at the Strand, TBH. But when I was living in New York, I was studying dance. I was at Tisch, and Tisch dance has really small classes. So I was in this small group of like probably 30 of the most talented people I've ever met. And my first year of school, it was fine. But I really struggled with feeling like an imposter. Like at the end of the year, we had these sort of like trials where we'd stand up in front of all of our teachers and they'd be in a semicircle and we'd go in and they'd give us feedback about, you know, here's what you did well, here's what we want to see from you next year. And it was like horrible. It was mortifying. And I remember walking into the end of my first year and my teachers were all like, you need to have more confidence. Like you need to stand in the front of the class. You can't, you know, sulk around in the back. You need to do it with your full ass, you know, not be embarrassed. And I remember crying and being like, I think you guys made a mistake. I don't think I'm supposed to be here. Like, I'm just not. Everyone is so good and so smart and so artistic. And I'm none of those things. I think you made a mistake. And they were very, you know, generous and probably said a lot of things that I'm forgetting. But the main takeaway was, no, you're supposed to be here. And I didn't believe them at all. Why would I? And it wasn't until the next fall of my next year. And I really was like, what the fuck am I doing? I don't belong here. If I can't even make it here, how am I possibly going to be a professional dancer? Do I even want to be a professional dancer? Like, what is the point? What is the point of all this? What's the point of making art? There's so many other things that I could do to like contribute to society. You know, I was really in my feels. I was 19. Okay. And I read this book probably very self-seriously. And I just remember being like, oh my God, okay. Yeah, this is what I needed to hear. Like, this is what I needed to get me to show up every day and just do it. And I really don't think I would have made it through my art school experience. And I don't know if I would have gone on to dance and make work or do anything creative, to be honest with you, if I hadn't read this because it just gave me the wind that my sails needed at that time to keep me going. And definitely you're going to hear all about it. But I recommend it to anyone, anyone, anyone. And I do think it's a deeply spiritual text. Upon my second, third, fourth, fifth, you know, reads, I'm like, this is Bible. It is Bible. You know, it's full of these totally deep, but also not that serious anecdotes and little kernels of wisdom that it doesn't matter what you're doing. If you consider yourself an artist or a creative, or if you consider yourself, you know, a spiritual person, or if you're just like, I'm just regular, degular, just trying to, you know, make it by in this world. I think that this book will change your life, not to put it like, not to be dramatic about it, but I do think it can do that. So with that, we're going to get into the episode. And like I said, I had the absolute delight and the gift, truly, of getting to talk to Courtney Romano about this book. Courtney is producer, director, writer, just incredible, multifaceted talent. And Court got her start as an actor. And you'll hear all about her journey. She has a web series called Kinsley Verses that you can watch now. And she's just truly such a wonderful, impressive, delightful person who just is always bubbling over with creativity. And she really inspires me. So I'm really happy that we got to talk about this book. And I hope that you enjoy it. And you, I mean, if you don't go read the book, at least you take something away from this conversation that hopefully centers you and nourishes you in the way that you deserve to be nourished. And like I said, this recap's great, but you shouldn't do anything. I would recommend you go listen to the book or you go read the book. It's wonderful. You can get it from your library, probably. I couldn't get it at my library for some weird reason, but maybe you can get it at yours. Maybe you can request it at yours. I don't know. Honestly, it's worth throwing your dollars at Stephen Pressfield because he's amazing. And you can also follow him on Substack and he is still at it. And I love him for that. Okay, with that, we're going to get into the episode. I hope that you enjoy this. And maybe we'll do some more spiritual text apps if you all like them. All right, that's it. Let's get into it. I know that we have a mutual love and adoration for The War of Art. And I am doing a new series called Spiritual Text, where we talk about pseudo or like spiritual texts in hiding, like books like The War of Art that are actually totally like it's Bible.
It's holy.
It is. And it's like a life-changing book. So I have lots of questions for you and lots to get into. But yeah, I'm excited to see you. And I just have to start with always, I love and adore you. And I'm like always impressed by everything that you're doing. Like, I can't believe you do everything that you do. And I'm just like, okay, Courtney can do it. So Courtney's making it look really easy. So I guess I need to stop complaining and just do it.
That's to me, that feels insane because for so many reasons. One, I don't think anything's easy, nor is ease something I feel in my life right now. And number two, that I look at you and I'm like, I aspire. I'm like, she's dancing. She's making music videos. She's making pants. She's making bread. She's making business. I can only say that I like flip it and reverse it. And I think that's just what's so cool about you too, is like you're making all these things and you're also always self-inquiring, you know? And I think that's kind of what The War of Art is about actually, right? It's like the self-inquiry and the act of creation going hand in hand. And so, yeah, that's why I'm obsessed with you. And if you get even a fraction of that for me, then I feel hashtag blessed and I'm all done here.
Well, I do. I always look to you as a lighthouse where I'm like, I know it's not easy and yet you do it and you do it so well. Like, it seems like anything that you decide that you're inspired to do, you figure out how to do it. Like, I'm really into, I love reading plays. I'm like, oh, what an amazing thing it would be to be able to write a play. And I'm like, I could never do that. And and I'm like, I mean, but people teach themselves how to be screenwriters. Like, Courtney taught herself how to be a screenwriter and is an amazing screenwriter and director and producer. And like, that speaks to your talent first and foremost, but also that it's even possible to like I don't have to go to grad school to learn how to write. Like I can study it and you've worked really hard at it, but like, yeah. And you have a job and you have two kids and you have a life and you somehow like make it happen. It's just like, it is possible. It's not an impossible thing to do. It's very possible. And you do it so well. So
the one thing that I would take issue with is that you said that I have a life. I definitely don't have a life. I definitely, we're bootstrapping the childcare over here. It's just me and Craig, my husband, but to make that happen. So we definitely don't have a life. Although we did see Danny Brown last weekend, which was phenomenal. But yeah, I think something that sometimes people do ask me that question, mostly since I've had kids. And I don't know if you get this too after having Rhodes, but they'll be like, how do you do it? And it's a funny question to me because for me, like making things is compulsion. Like making things is, I mean, I sometimes wish I had a grand plan, and I am working harder nowadays with less time and less freedom and more constraints to be more methodical and surgical with what I'm doing. But even when I choose to do something, it is like I'm being compelled by something beyond myself. And usually I think no one is going to get this or understand this or care. But like, I have to do it anyway, because otherwise I'm just going to be an absolute nightmare for everyone that I live with.
Yeah, I understand that wholly and completely. It's like an exorcism. Like the things need to be literally exorcised from my body, like the ideas and the action, you know, the energy, or else it will be like a poltergeist in my life. Like it'll just keep fucking shit up and like truly haunting me. And yeah, fucking everything up. And that actually is, I didn't remember that like is in The War of Art. He talks about that. And let's go back. So when did you first read The War of Art? Do you remember?
I probably read it in 2011 or 2012 was the first time. I had an acting teacher who quoted actually that part of The War of Art to me, something about, you know, Hitler was going to be...
I have that highlighted. Do you want me to read it?
Yeah, can you? Go for it.
It's kind of like when you read it in the book, you're kind of like, whoa, that's intense. Okay, let me find it really fast. Anytime you see a mention of Hitler, it's a little like, whoa. Okay, so he says, you know, Hitler wanted to be an artist. At 18, he took his inheritance, 700 kronen, and moved to Vienna to live and study. He applied to the Academy of Fine Arts and later to the School of Architecture. Ever seen one of his paintings? Neither have I. Resistance beat him. Call it an overstatement, but I'll say it anyway. It was easier for Hitler to start World War II than it was for him to face a blank square of canvas.
Yeah.
I don't know if you could get away with that, honestly, in 2024, writing that out. In 2003, was a different world.
It was a different world, and it might be an overstatement. Like, that might be an overstatement, Pressfield. However, I remember hearing that at a time in my creative life where I was desperate. I was so desperate for things to happen. I had been out of school for a while. I had been like doing my damnedest to get onto Broadway. And I kept getting like a little bit closer, but never landing it. And I felt terrible all the time. Like truly, I just felt so down on myself. And even as I was compelled towards these big things that I really wanted. And I remember an acting teacher talking about that. And it resonated with me so deeply because I was like, yes, okay. Like, I'm not out here starting World War II, obviously, but like, I do see where I'm destructive because I'm not filtering my attention towards something creative. And so I think that was the first time that it came into my life and my awareness.
Did you run out and immediately read it and buy it? And did it sink into your psyche? Or was it more of a, like, one of those things that's kind of brewing on the bookshelf for a while? And you're like, it's a rainy day. I guess I'll read it. Cause I don't know. The universe is like, okay, now you're really ready to get this message.
Yeah. You know, it might have been, now that I'm saying 2011, 2012, it's definitely earlier than that because it must have been 2008, actually, because when Craig, my husband, and I started dating, we would read it and we would write our notes in the same book. And like, I was just looking at my copy and we have notes back and forth.
That's so cute.
Yeah, it was like the last cute thing we did. But now we write each other notes back and forth. And like, I have references to Obama in there. So it was definitely 2008. I think when I was going through it at that time, that was when it was really landing. And I had just crossed a threshold in my career where I'd just gotten my first big job. I think I had been making like $200 a week doing these regional theater shows. And that summer that I really went into it, I had started, you know, I booked something that I was making like $1,200 a week, and it was with bigger names. So I had like convinced myself this was my moment. It was just a matter of time. And so I was just going through this transition, and I had read this book, and it changed my brain. Like, it just changed my brain because it gave a framework for how to think about a career as an artist and what it means as like a vocation and what it means as a craft. And I had been immersed in a world of like results and your type and these like more like shallow things, but I had always felt like a deeper connection to the work that I was doing, but I was playing in this very shallow field. So I felt like it gave me language to use for the first time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really does drill down into your soul's work. Your soul has work to do and you have to do it. And if you don't do it, you're fucked and you're missing the point. And if you're only focusing on, yeah, getting results or building a billion-dollar business or getting on Broadway or whatever, winning a Grammy, then it won't matter. It'll feel hollow and cheap and you'll feel just as bad is kind of the takeaway of, I mean, one of the big takeaways of the War of Art for me. So do you remember what what really stuck with you that first time that you read it? Other than a creative life, basically, is what we're aiming towards or what we're orienting ourselves towards. Do you have like a core idea or nugget or mantra other than the Hitler one that you went back to over and over?
Yeah, like Hitler's definitely not in my list of mantras.
Don't be like Hitler, maybe, but you know, other than that,
that's just a pretty standard human to do. Yeah, I mean, I think that the whole resistance piece and the whole self-doubt piece was transformative to me because before I had read this book, I believed that I wasn't calling it resistance, but my resistance, my self-doubt, my negative thought patterns, my, you know, distrust in what I was doing in myself, my lack of self-trust, I thought all of that was an indication that I wasn't good enough. I thought all of that was an indication that I'm trying to make something work that's just never going to work, or that for some reason I was wrong or bad because I had those feelings, like just to put it in a very like lowest common denominator. So when I read that and he was saying things that I had said to myself, explaining moments that I had also had. And it was this, you know, like at the time, I don't know, 50-year-old man from California, like not a 20-something chorus girl in New York City. Like we were so different. I was like, okay, so there's some truth here. And that was the thing that like, even to this day, I think about it like every day, if not every other day.
Wow. Yeah. That like personification of resistance and also the fact that resistance means you are right, like you are right for the thing that you're in. It's not a sign that you're wrong for it. Like having self-doubt actually means you're on the right path. And if you don't have self-doubt, then you really should watch your back. Then maybe you should question what you're doing with your life.
Yeah. He says the thing about the tree, right? The higher the tree is, you know, the bigger the dream is, the more it's going to cast a shadow. So the higher the tree, the longer the shadow. The bigger the love of the project or the drive towards something, the bigger the shadow, the inner shadow, the self-doubt and all of that. And I think we really get goaded into thinking, if I'm meant to do something, it's going to feel right and good at every step. But like you always say, like the work is the artistic work, the making the business, the making the art, the making the humans, you know, the parenting, all of that is self-actualization. So like there's no other point in self-actualization that I have found that feels like super comfy and luxe, you know? And I think it's the same. It's the same in making creative work. It's just because you're feeling that self-doubt, like you said, that's actually an indication that you're onto something.
Yeah. So I've reread this book so many times in my life, but I obviously did a close read this week before this session. And I swear to God, I was like highlighting every single line in the book. It's like, it's all so good. And I loved what really was sticking with me, or was quite a bit, but the idea that resistance, this like, so for everyone listening who hasn't read this book, you should. It'll take you like literally an hour. It's super short. It's also a really good audiobook. And I think it's like an hour long if you listen to it, the author read it. But he talks about resistance as this sort of like, that is the thing that holds us back. It's going to be, it's the dragon we have to vanquish. But unfortunately, it's like, we have to vanquish it every single day. And it doesn't matter how good you are. It doesn't matter how practiced you are, how much success you have, you still have resistance. And it shows up in all these different ways. And there are many symptoms of resistance, and it's really strong. And it actually gets stronger as you get closer to the finish line, because resistance, its only job is to basically stop you from completing your soul's work, or yeah, doing your art, whatever it might be. And I loved that, because I was like, oh shit, that is totally a thing for me. The closer I get to the finish line of something, the more I'm like, this is dumb. This is so stupid. Why would I even do this? Like, it doesn't matter. It's almost like the better I get, the more I'm like, I don't know. I don't know about that. I guess I'll just, whatever. It was a silly idea. I felt red. I felt a little bit intimidated.
Yes. Yes. It's the 11th hour. Something's always going to happen in the 11th hour. Like, always. That stuff happened when I was putting out my web series. Like, that stuff happened in the 11th hour, where I was like, whoa, didn't see that one coming. And and it required something of me that the work had not yet required of me. You know what I mean? It's like it's like in the hero's journey. It's like that final boss, or like that final dragon. And sometimes I think about Will Smith, because I think about the slap, and I think about what I heard. I wasn't there. I didn't hear it, but I heard Will Smith say that Denzel Washington said to him, which is I'm paraphrasing, but something to the effect of, when you are about to like land on your dreams, or when you're about to get everything you've always wanted, that's when the devil comes for you. And I think it's the same concept of like, okay, you're at the height of your career. You're about to win. You are literally in 20 minutes about to win the biggest award you could possibly win, something you've been working towards for your entire career. And now this singular joke about your wife, who you have a dynamic with. I'm not trying to like read Will Smith and like his inner psychology. I couldn't if I tried. But it is such a, for me, like an archetypal example of what we can face when we are so close to, like you said, like achieving the thing.
Pressfield talks about trouble. Like, we make trouble for ourselves, and that trouble can look like so many different ways. And this is the only part of the book that I really am like, because he says, we get sick. We always get sick, or we create illness in ourselves if we don't do our soul's work. And I'm like, part of that I definitely prescribe to, but I also think it's a little simplified, much like the Hitler anecdote. But, you know, there are different types of trouble. Trouble of like, yeah, being in a nasty relationship, or being the problem at work, or getting a shitty job that takes up all of your attention and energy, or having shitty friends, or I don't know, any other type of trouble that you could create for yourself. Addiction, like spending too much time on things like your computer or social media, all of the, even like psychologically going through it, going over, not working through our own issues, like repeating them again and again and again. And all of that is resistance as distraction, you know, creating problems for you so that you can't spend your energy towards the thing that you're here to do, so that you're distracted by the other stuff that comes up. And I believe parts of that. I have a little bit of a hard time with all of the health stuff, or with resistance being the cause of all of our problems. But I don't know. What do you think about that?
So I think a couple things with with the health stuff and the Hitler stuff. I do think he's like he's going more for style points there than anything else, because it is like it is a kind of reductive way to think about things. But I think about like, what do I want to get out of the trouble that I end up looking for? And on the other side of trouble for me, when I cause it for myself and my people, sorry, people, I am looking to burn it down. Like I am looking to burn it down. I am a Sagittarius rising, so there's a little bit of fire there, and I want to and, you know, start again. And part of the allure, I think, for me in burning something down, truly, whether it's like a relationship where I'm like, I want to say this thing so that we cut each other off, or I want to, you know, just like blow something up, like that doesn't need to be blown up. Like what I'm trying to really get to is that safe feeling of beginning again. Because when you round out the cycle and when you take something from inception to process to final execution, that's it. You have made the thing. And then you have to stand next to the thing and say, was that what I meant to do? And 10 out of 10 times for me, nope. and not like I didn't do a great job, not like I'm not proud of it, but I'm always looking at it like, oh, okay, so I wish it was a little bit like that. I would have made, you know, I think about my series that I put up. It's just now it's living. It is online. It is how it is. There's no final cuts to be made. It's no longer edited. And whenever I look at it and see something, I'm like, ooh, I would do that here. I would do that there. And it's never finished. And I think there's a fear for me that if I look at my work and admit that it's never finished, that I don't know. I don't know what that is, actually. I don't know. I think I know what it is. Like, I think it's just that discomfort in the liminal space. But do you know what I mean by that? And do you feel that at all?
Yeah. I think part of me, the trouble that I make, the drama that I make is just action. You know, I want something. I want like an instant gratification of some sort of thing to respond to. And so often, like, the process of making something and doing your soul's work is like slow and tedious and like not that satisfying day to day. I mean, like, it's not like checking off a to-do list every single day and getting everything done. There's always more work to do. So I think that the like burn it down or like cause an argument and get someone to cut you off, it's like, it does feel satisfying because it's like, it's something that happens. It's something that happens when maybe it doesn't feel like a lot is going on above the surface. But yeah, I mean, inevitably, when I start out, I'll say with some sort of project or idea, like, oh, I'm going to start a company or I'm going to start a business. I had a clear idea of where I wanted it to go, and it has a soul of its own. You know, it has its own destiny. And I really believe that every entity, everything outside of us has its own destiny and soul. And, you know, sometimes it coalesces with our own destiny and matches up really beautifully. And other times they're honestly at odds with each other. Like, what's best for, I don't know, this creative work to be in the world is actually going to like destroy my life for a little bit and is not healthy for me. But that's what it needs to, I don't know, be what it needs to be. And I find that a lot with people's businesses, that they think that their business is them and like it is their destiny, when in reality, they really are two different entities and have different desires. And I think Pressfield like kind of talks about this in a way when he talks about the muse, kind of like Liz Gilbert does in Big Magic. They both have a very similar perspective on muse drops or universe or source or God. He actually calls them angels, sort of whisper in your ear something that's supposed to be created, and they've picked you to be the instrument that brings it into the world, and you get to decide what you want to do with that. I liked seeing that. I was like, oh, wait, that's from Big Magic, but actually you wrote it first. That's very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. He actually, Stephen Pressfield is big on channeling. Actually, I was even thinking his prayer that he says before he starts writing. Isn't that the pathway process prayer for like reading the account? I was like, wait, this is literally what Michelle teaches. Like, he says a prayer. It's from the Odyssey or something like that. And then he starts writing and he talks about the muse coming in and like basically just being a channel for that story. And I think that is like, that to me is the fun of being an artist, of being like, no, I am not my work. I am the conduit for something so much bigger than me. And I have no idea what it's going to do. And I have no idea where it's going to go. And then like, once you become the channel or the conduit for that, then you have to become the steward. And I think that shift is like a really tricky one to make in art and in business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And part of being the steward, you're just like, you're setting it up and knocking it out of the park to just talk all about this book and all the concepts in it. But he talks about the amateur versus the professional, right? And like, I feel like my first reading, The Resistance, was really what I needed to hear, because I was like ready to quit school because I was like, I can never be a dancer. I suck. I'm the worst. Everyone hates me. And then I read this book and I was like, okay, never mind. Fine. And then like, I guess I'll just cry after class every day. And that's just like how it is.
It's the sign that you're on the right track.
Yeah, exactly. Fine. And the second time I read it, I was like, oh, this like professional versus amateur thing is so interesting to me, because the amateur is what I've been told is how I'm supposed to be. I'm supposed to be this like emotional and like deeply caring and just like so passionate. And like, that means that I'm right or that I'm good. When in reality, like the professional doesn't wait for inspiration to show up, doesn't, you know, it just shows up every day, even if they don't have a lot to share, even if they're kind of having an off day, they still show up and do it, and they fine tune the skills. They really work on their craft, on honing their craft. And I think that goes back to being a steward, right? If you are responsible for, like, I don't know, raising a child or bringing a screenplay to life, then you better be fucking good. You better be a good writer. You better learn how to be a good parent, because that's now your responsibility. You've been tasked with it by the universe. And I think about that a lot. Yeah, obviously, when it comes to intuitive business, like, sure, you can totally wing it. Absolutely, you can wing it with anything that you're supposed to bring into the world. But like, are you really honoring that gift, that thing that has been bestowed to you, if you're not giving it the offering it the highest potential to succeed or to exist, I guess. It's very confronting.
It is very confronting. I was just thinking about, I just got this image in my head of something I wrote in my notebook so long ago when you and I both worked at the same place. And I was just writing notes to myself every day being like, it's okay. You'll be okay.
One day you'll be okay.
It's not this year, but maybe next. But I remember it was something I wrote down to myself that I had never said before. It wasn't in my vocabulary. I just wrote, go full throttle. And like, that's not something that I like, it's not like a phrase that I use. It's not like I didn't hear it before, but out of nowhere, I wrote, go full throttle. And I remember looking at it and being like, what does that mean? And I think it means kind of what you're talking about, is like becoming a steward, a channel, even just marketing your own work or marketing your business is a full throttle moment. There, you can't be half in, half out for it to land. And that doesn't mean, like, in my mind, that doesn't mean like, oh, when I was marketing my series, I thought everyone's going to love this. Everyone's going to say, this is, Amy Poehler's going to watch this. And she's going to say, hey, Court, come on board. I'm going to, you know, Broad City you. Like, it wasn't that, right? But it was, I will work to the capacity that I have. And then like 10% to 15% past that, to just be sure that I have done personally everything that I can do to let this be in the world and let this live in the world in whatever way it's supposed to be. And I did not do that when I was younger. And I definitely didn't do that before I read this book, because I was always conflating, if I don't get that audition, if I don't get that callback, if I don't get that gig, it's because of me and who I am at a soul level. And that's just, I mean, that is, I've now been around the block many decades, and I can say that's just not the way that it is. It's just not true.
It's not. And it really humbles me when I think about, like, we have both had lots of different careers and been professionals in many different industries and areas. And I think about, you know, what I started with, which was dancing, and all the people who I look at now in that small pool who are successful, we were in the same classes, right? Going to the same 10 a.m. class at whatever, DNA or Perry Dance or movement research, right? And they weren't the best in the class. They were just the one that showed up every single week. That doesn't mean they're not amazing dancers, but I would guess that the reason that they're successful is because they're there and I'm not, right? They kept going. They kept doing it. They kept fine-tuning their instrument and practicing with their instrument. And yeah, they went full throttle and stayed in it, had the endurance to stay in it. And that really, I think, is what often sets us apart. We assume that people who are successful are more talented or more lucky. But I think really, even like looking at businesses, I've been so lucky to be able to consult with so many and see how they work on the inside. And the ones that are successful now so often are just the ones who are able to float by for as many years as they needed to finally reach success. Like they either got an infusion of capital or they figured out how to like pivot for a little bit and make some money. And honestly, they were just buying themselves time to figure it out and stay in it. And they had the energy to stay in it, like the motivation to continue trying to like look at that problem. And that's so annoying. It's so annoying.
It really is.
But like, it's just about staying in it. That's it.
I think talent as a concept is like so overrated. Like, and I used to think, like in the same way that you're talking about those dancers, like I used to think if I can't hit a perfect mix belt on an F sharp, I'm never going to get this role. Are you kidding me? Like, are you kidding me? I could sing an octave down now and probably book roles faster than when I could sing like all of the octaves because I have time on my side. That's not to say that if you're older, you have more to give than someone who's younger. I'm not saying that. But I do think that like time has given my craft and my process so much. And I think that's a hard thing at the beginning of a career because you're like, well, I don't have time. I can't speed up time. I can't fast forward. I want to learn, but I can only learn what's, you know, right ahead of me. And I think when I was younger, I definitely got seduced into thinking that talent was the thing that was going to separate me either, you know, like towards the jobs or away from the jobs. And again, that's not how the world works.
We really live in a culture that values like virtuosity and youth. And I remember we all reached this point, right, where we are used to being the youngest person in the room. And, you know, like, oh my God, I'm so much younger than everyone here. I'm so like special. And then you start to be, it's like you're surrounded by people that are your age and you're like, okay, cool. This is great. I'm amongst my peers. And then you start to see people who are much younger than you be in the room and they're smart and they're doing stuff. And it's like, huh, interesting. But what's most interesting about them isn't their age. Like it's not that they're whatever prodigious. In fact, like sometimes that's kind of annoying. It becomes less important to be like this wunderkind because that's an identity. As you slowly become like detached from that identity because naturally we age or you die, I guess, you have to figure out like, but what is the special thing about me if it's not going to be that I'm young? Because you're not going to be young forever. I've been thinking about that a lot. Just the like, yeah, you're not the youngest person in the room. That you can't rely on, you know, I'm special because I'm young.
Yeah. Oh, it's so funny too, because I know this, but I am going to turn 40 this year, which is crazy to me because I think I'm 8, but whatever.
I feel like a teen mom. I remember going in to give birth and I was like, oh my God, they're going to be like, she's so young. Like, how is this woman even having a baby? I'm like, you're 33 years old. You're not so young, okay?
Babies having babies. When I went in to have my second child, they were like, ma'am, you're about to die soon because you're geriatric and you're... I was like, but look at my skin. Look, it's so bright and lustrous. No, it's not.
You look very young, and 40 is young. So
40 is young. And, but what's so funny, right, is like, I'm almost 40. I'm like, okay, I'm so into it. Like, I think it's so hot. I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to be so hot in my 40s. This is great. Like, this is excellent. And yet I'm applying for these like over 40 screen writers labs things because I'm like, yes. And then in my head, I'm like, sweet, I'll be the youngest one there. It's like, it's so insidious.
It's kind of like wild. It's kind of interesting how we just, yeah, the identity that we sort of like attach ourselves to. And that's another part of this book, right? Is that Pressfield is like amateurs versus professionals. Amateurs associate themselves with, I am a musician, I am a dancer, I am a medium, I am a psychic, I am a healer, whatever. Professionals are like, I'm just me, dude, and I do this thing. And I just show up every day and I do my job, and like, it ain't that deep. It's not so serious. It's not so precious. And I think, like, yeah, in some sort of like via the transitive property, we can relate that back to the age thing of like, yeah, it's not that, it's whatever. Like, it doesn't matter. It's just do your work. It doesn't matter how old you are or how talented you are.
Yes. And not only that, but like, I think I'm better at my work now. I think I have more to say now. I have more fun making now than I have ever had in my entire life. I would not switch my life now with any other time in my life. Like, I dig it. It's so, I mean, it's like the hardest time of my life with two kids under five, but it's also like when I make things, I am having fun because it is coming from me and not my, you know, Pressfield talks about ego versus self. And ego is like, I want to win an Academy Award, and self is like, I want to express and create this thing that like I feel I have to do because it's so beautiful and I'm so moved by it. I feel now in my life like it's not always it's not always the self, right? But we're at least skewing 51-49 towards the self, at least.
I'm so glad you brought up the ego thing, because he very briefly touches on like, I'm writing a novel or I'm writing a screen. Like, he wrote the screenplay, The Legend of Bagger Vance. Maybe Will Smith was in it. I don't remember.
I think he was, actually.
this is a deeply connected spiderweb thinking podcast. But okay, so he wrote this screenplay, right? It's not Tenet. He's like, I'm not curing cancer. I'm not solving all of the world's problems. I'm not, you know, getting rid of nuclear zones. Like, I get that it's maybe not the most serious thing in the world. What I'm doing, art, making something beautiful, making something that entertains someone for an hour and a half. And yet it is the most important thing because it is soul's work. And I really liked that because for so much of my life, I had a really hard time justifying what I wanted to spend my time on, like what called to me, whether it was dance or choreography or, yeah, like astrology or running a business or honestly like copywriting. I'm like, but who cares? Who cares about any of this stuff? Like, why does this matter? Why do I care so much about it? And I felt really heartened by reading that of like, it does matter. And I think that that's a problem that a lot of people, really caring people, run into, that they feel as if they need to make some gigantic impact according to what our societal expectations of impact are, and don't realize how big of an impact it is to do your soul's work on this planet with clarity and like through the self versus through ego, you know?
Yeah. Well, and what you're saying is making me think about like, what more important thing could there be than self-actualizing in your life and taking ownership of your life and that kind of creative work? Like, yeah, Legend of Bagger Vance surely didn't cure cancer, but did it bring him to a place where he, Stephen Pressfield, where he could be more Stephen Pressfield and more his artistic self, but also just more his self. And that ripples out into the world, into the people around us. And like, how are we going to make an impact on the world if we are not showing up as ourselves in the fullest version of whatever that is? So if the piece of art or the copywriting or the business or the, you know, whatever is going to help you do that like self-excavation, then like, of course it's serious. It doesn't have to be serious out there to be serious for our lives.
And you never know what, you know, He wrote The Legend of Bagger Vance. He got all that money. He was probably able to write this book based off of that, right? And viewed as an expert. And I think I can speak for both of us that this book has changed both of our lives and countless other lives. Who knows who else it's reached and touched and inspired to do something. He has no clue. We'll never be able to map it. But you never know where your work is going to end up or what your work will trigger in someone or something. And it might not be, in fact, your work might trigger like a negative reaction or anger or discomfort. And like, and that can be very informative and important too. Like, it doesn't have to just be some beautiful thing that's inspiring. Your work can be challenging and make a huge impact on people.
Yeah. And I think you're also hitting on like what he talks about with unseen forces. Like that's so much throughout the book and through all of his books and his interviews and everything is like the unseen forces that are working with you at all times. So when you like commit to something, you know, that you couldn't do on Tuesday, unseen forces kind of rise up to meet you where you are. And on Thursday, you can do the thing. You didn't know how to write a screenplay, and then you took a step towards it, and some things fell into line so that you could write this screenplay. So on the other end of our creative work, yeah, I agree. I think you do not know how your work is going to impact the world. And there, I do believe personally that there are unseen forces that are using it, I think, for the highest good, even if the highest good is like, ooh, gonna burn that down or like gonna make someone mad or be challenging or confronting. And that's part of doing the dance as an artist, I think, too, is being like, there will be things I do not know about my work. And I have to be okay with working with what I do know and allowing the rest to unfold.
It strikes me just in this conversation that this is alchemy. Like this is the practice of alchemy, right? That one door opens the next. You're not quite sure where it's going to go. The alchemist who is in it because they want to self-discover, not because they want to create gold, will inevitably create gold. That's a happy byproduct of the process. But if you go into alchemy trying to actually make real gold to get, you know, to get rich, you won't ever be able to make it because you're not pure of heart. And I mean, it kind of feels like what he's talking about, but just, you know, with writing, with resistance. And I love the idea of the forces outside of us, the hidden forces and the ripple effects that like, if I move this, and now this unseen force moves this way, what does that create an opening for in your life? Because now there's this, you know, that we're all connected in some way, like through the fabric of time and space and blah, blah, blah energy. Yeah. But now I'm getting a little too into it. But it's just such a good book. It really is.
It's truly like you said, it's Bible. It is one of those books where we have way too many books and they're all color coded on our shelf and we're always trying to get rid of the books. And I'm like, you best not touch my Pressfield. Like it's going nowhere.
Well, and like, you're going to give it to your kids at some point and like, be like, okay, good luck with this one. Just yeah, go for it. It's going to teach you some stuff, you know, or I feel like I think I loaned my copy out to someone because I recommend this book to so many people and they haven't given it back. And that's okay. You know who you are if you're listening. But it really is like, it's one of those just like little hidden gems that is so potent. And I wish that I could write something as good as this. It's short, sweet, and just like, it's so powerful and so needed.
Yeah. And you know what? Like you said, pure of heart. And I really feel like just I was watching a couple of interviews with him recently because I knew we were going to chat. And he is so pure of heart. Like he believes it. He believes it. And that even as just an example of someone who's saying like, okay, this crazy thing, I'm just going to do it. Like I'm going to write this book in, you know, as we discovered 2003 or whatever, where like people aren't really writing those books at that time. And I'm going to put it out. And it's like these short chapters. It's like the Tao Te Ching of Pressfield. It's like, you know, he's just going to do it. And it is so, I don't know, just even that example for me as an artist is like, right, Courtney, if you are doing what you want to do from a place of pure intention, it will hit. I don't know how it'll hit. It might not hit like you see it hit for other people, but in its own way, it will hit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll like change the fabric of the cosmos in some way. And it's none of your business how it does. It just will. Well, I mean, I could talk to you forever about this book because I just like love it and worship it. Is there anyone in particular that you feel as if needs to listen or read this book like ASAP Rocky, like, you know, instantly?
Yeah, I do. I think that the person who needs to read this book is thinking right now, yeah, but I'm not an artist. I don't know. I couldn't make a business, or oof, I don't know. Like, should I tread into that domain? Because I'm really just more of someone over here. I really don't know. Like, if there's any amount of self-doubt, I truly think this was like the spine of my like growing up as an artist, and it can do no wrong, except for the Hitler mention and the health mention. It can do no wrong. No, I think, yeah, anyone who's going through a moment of like self-doubt or lack of self-trust, like, it's a good time to read it.
Yeah. Amen. If you're feeling lost, this book will help you find yourself and like give you the will to continue on, but not because it's going to tell you answers of like, here's what you do next. And I think that that's the best type of book, because it almost like continues to bloom inside of you and give back to you and like keep you going as you develop a relationship with it. And I would say, if you read this book a while ago and you haven't read it recently, it is definitely worth the hour of your life to read it again, or at least to flip through it, because it's just nugget after nugget. You know, you'll find what you need to, you'll find the message that you need from it.
Yeah. It hits different 20 years later. It hits different.
I know. I like made me kind of weepy thinking about the first time I read this book. And like, I remember highlighting a passage and like, I brought it into one of my teachers and I was like, this is like, this book, it like means something to me. And they were like, okay, cool. I'm glad that like you're, cause I'd been like, I want to leave. I'm not good. I'm the worst one in my class. And, you know, making up all these stories. And they were like, you're supposed to be here. Like, we picked you to be here for a reason. I was like, I don't think so. I think you got it wrong. I think you guys were wrong, actually. And and then like finding this book and being like, look what I found. Look at what I highlighted. And they're like, okay, yeah, that's great.
Like that moment of being whatever age you are, but like of being like, wait a minute, that is not just me. This is a law of the universe, is so orienting. And I think for like artists, entrepreneurs, people who are like, just a scotch outside of the status quo in any way. Like sometimes we don't want to be in the mainstream. We just want to like know where we stand. And I feel like those moments of finding like just a little passage that speaks to you, whether you're 22 or 42, is like, how is that not impactful? How is that not life-changing?
Right. To realize that you're not trying to grow up or get better or become a professional because the fear will go away. If I just do this more or practice it more, then I won't be scared anymore or it won't be hard anymore. It's nice to reorient towards, well, this is what I'll live with forever. So I'm going to always be a little bit scared or a little bit nervous or have self-doubt. Instead of trying to like ameliorate that, I'm just going to have to live with it and figure out how to work with it, as opposed to, I don't know, banish it from my life. Like, I guess it's like a lifelong friend. And it's such a waste of energy, at least for me, to try and get rid of it, you know, to try and destroy it, because it's always going to be a part of me. So I might as well put my energy towards something useful.
My husband will say to me when I'm getting really existential in the middle of a process, he'll be like, I'll be like, Craig, this is what's happening. It's never going to work out. I'm a fraud. I'm a hack, you know? And he'll be like, he'll look at his pretend watch on his wrist and he'll be like, yep, that's about the time in this process that you always say that, Court. Like, it's like clockwork. You are, yep, this is where you are. And that's so helpful, because I'm like, yes, this is a cycle. It is not a finish line. And so, okay, more information.
kind of annoying that it's not a finish line and that we don't get to just like pick up our feet at the end. Kind of annoying that we have to keep going. But like, okay, great. Now that I know what's ahead of me, like I can sort of plan myself out a little bit more.
Exactly. I have my existential crisis on Friday and I'm back at it on Monday.
Exactly. Yeah. Like just like clockwork. Is there a book that you would recommend after reading The War of Art, like a next step, a next spiritual text, if you will?
Yeah, actually, I'm so glad you asked this because this book for me goes hand in hand with Letters to a Young Artist by Anna Deavere Smith.
Oh, I've never read that.
Oh, okay. You've got to. We actually have two copies of that one because neither of us wanted to give up our notes. But but it is Anna Deavere Smith is a writer and an actor and a performer and a producer and all these things. And she writes letters to a young artist and answers questions, like kind of like a Dear Abby thing, but like going back and forth between a real person. And they're all in this book. And I read it at a similar time that I read The War of Art. And these two things, like I could have skipped college. Like I could have just saved that money, saved that debt, and bought these two books. So I think it is Letters to a Young Artist, but again, it's the same thing as The War of Art, where like I reread it every year and it gives me something new every year. And so, yeah, I couldn't recommend that one more.
Okay, great. I've added it to cart in my mind. I'm going to get it from my library, although they did not have The War of Art at the LA Public Library.
What?
If you can believe that. Yeah. At least on my Libby app, they did not have it. So
wow.
Stunning.
Sacrilege.
And a stunning blow. Yeah. But I'm definitely gonna read Letters to a Young Artist. Court, how can people find you and your work and everything that you're up to? Because you're, like I said, a multi-talented freak show in the best way possible. Like you're exuding creativity out of your pores and, you know, making things all the time. It's so impressive. So how can people go witness and experience it?
Oh my gosh. Well, you're so sweet. And honestly, like I just have to shout out the fact that you this year specifically and Holisticism and the North Node and all of these things that you create have given me structure and life and vision and foresight. And mm-hmm. So I hope you don't edit this part out at all. I hope you keep it in because I want people to know how supporting and foundational the work is that you're doing. And I think everyone should just, you know, line up and do it. So thank you for that. And thank you for all the ways you have supported me this year. And if people want to learn more about me and stuff that I do, they can go to queensbirdfilms.com and join my email list.
I got it today. I love it.
Oh, well, thank you so much. Yeah, I'm also at queensbirdfilms on the Instagram. And if you want to watch my web series, it's on YouTube, also under Queensbird Films. It's called Kinsley Versus, and it's about writer who struggles to write. So it's literally this book incarnate.
And it's amazing. And it has many mystical elements to it, I will say, Kinsley Versus.
Yeah, it really does. Looking back on it.
Yeah. Well, thank you for making the time and for your brilliance. And yeah, I love you. You're the best.
I love you. Thank you.
The 12th House is produced by the Holisticism team with theme music by Nathan McKay and edited by the incredible Softer Sound Studio, who you can find more information about in our show notes. Thanks for listening.